This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Seth Ennis, who's in Limerick.
Yep.
Dear Mark and Kenny, just spent a weekend in Oxford where my girlfriend and I watched the fabulous A Single Man at the Phoenix Picture House. Remind me who's in there.
A Single Man. I think it stars Colin Firth and isn't Matthew Good?
Matthew Good's in
there. I think he's in it. Alan, yeah, Matthew. I'm not sure, but I think he's in it.
Matthew's just moving on to his pudding now.
Enjoy.
However, the highlight of my weekend was my girlfriend's response to my disappointment not being around to meet the good doctor in person at his book signing at Waterstones on March the 1st. Never mind, she said. Seeing Mark Kermode in 3D is not the future and would not enhance the standard 1D and 2D format in any way. I felt that she had a point.
There was a quote by Roger Ebert that was twittered by somebody, which, I mean, Roger Ebert is just a great, great man. And he said, 3D is a waste of a perfectly good dimension.
Well, that's just because it fits with your prejudice.
No, but he's also said, for example, that 3D is infantilizing cinema, and that he feels the same way about 3D that I do, although I'm sure he feels it much more eloquently. And so he has exactly the same problems. And I was very pleased to hear in the news story just before we came on that Johnny Depp is unable to enjoy the full 3D experience due to the fact that he has slightly
wonky eyes.
Wonky eyes,
something like that. That's not a medical term. That's my sort of paraphrase.
No, that is. I think that is the officially wonky eyevitis.
Pete Poddington says, "Dear Bill Black and Scotty Moore, I'm looking forward to the Leap Year review, which, having watched the trailer, promises to be a good commodian ranty fair. This, however, pales into insignificance when compared to The Bounty Hunter, a romantic comedy starring Gerard Butler and Jennifer Aniston about a bounty hunter who has to bring in his ex-wife. With any luck, they'll also go on a journey. I mentioned this film to Dr. Cady's Talk in Bristol on Monday."
Yes, he did.
"You have been all over the place."
Yeah.
"Where he described it as a perfect storm of a film. This will be a rant to remember. Also, at his talk, I established that my hands are the same size as the good doctor's."
Exactly. "And so
I table a motion that from now on his hands be referred to as perfectly normal size, and if Dr. M has an issue with this, his hands will be referred to as unusually small."
There are several people that I have met who've got hands bigger than me. Did I tell you I met Peter Capaldi?
But they're all in the circus, Mark.
Ah. Did I tell you I met Peter Capaldi? Which you ignored.
Is that the same as Jim Capaldi?
No.
He's Capaldi, isn't he? Anyway, no, you didn't. And did he push you into a plate glass window as well?
No, he was just, you know, as I was walking towards him, I do mean Peter Capaldi, don't I? Who's Jim Capaldi? That's the other guy.
Jim Capaldi's the musician.
Yeah, no, fine, I'm sorry. I suddenly thought you were looking at me like, I've got his name. Yeah, so anyway, I thought that was... But I was walking towards him, and he was walking towards me. And him being from In the Loop, obviously from Local Hero and everything, I felt compelled to make the international gesture of, haven't I got big hands? And then he gave me a funny look. And said, "Don't blame me, blame Armando."
Ian Furman in Glasgow. "Dear Mark and Lard, I was sitting at a busy junction yesterday when a bus crossed in front of me and subsequently stopped, giving me ample time to take in the poster for Leap Year. Being prone to the occasional attack of word blindness, after taking in the not especially reassuring fact that the film is brought to you by the makers of 27 Dresses."
Yes.
I don't remember.
Yeah, you do.
What?
Oh, yeah, okay. 27. Yeah, you know, you do remember 27 Dresses. 27 Dresses was the one in which she's always the bridesmaid, never the bride.
All right. "For a fleeting moment, as the bus drove off, I couldn't work out why someone would call a film Leapy Ear. It was a minute before I realised that two words were actually joined together on the poster, and it was in fact Leap Year. Maybe I was thinking of 70s one-hit wonder Leapy Lee."
Yes.
"But I do now for no other reason than to ask for two tickets for Leapy Ear, if you don't mind."
Well, we shall definitely be referring to the film as Leapy Ear from here on in.
Which, given the way other people are talking about it, would seem to be the most pleasant thing anyone has got to say.
Including the people who are in it.
Now, this is because Mr. Good was supposed to be on this programme, but for now, very complicated reasons, like lunch... he's not going to... Also, it's probably not helped by the fact that he hasn't got a very good opinion of the film.
Apparently not, but should we come to that when we come to it?
Well, we can't... No, the reason I'm mentioning this now is that because there's a Matthew Good shaped hole in the programme, because we only found out, like, today, what I thought we'd do is, for the first time ever, as Colin Patterson was mentioning, we're going to do the box office top 10.
Yes.
In customary way, with phone involvement. However...
Hang on. Are you saying that that me doing the box office top 10 is no longer enough for you? Are you broadening this out?
Right. I still want to hear your pithy reviews.
Right.
And, of course, pronounced on some of these films, like Lovely Bones.
Yeah, so not only have I been away for a week and you've had other people... You weren't here either, right? But now I'm not allowed to do the top 10 on my own, but actually we need audience involvement.
It's just
Why don't we just let them do the show?
Well, no, I don't think that's a good idea. So if you have a one, so here come the top ten. So then, so the you know the phone number. Don't
yeah, are you going? Am I doing the top ten now?
No,
we're just going to read them out.
No,
what?
I'm reading that so that people know what the films are in the top ten. So that then
that's going to rather undercut any potential tension that's going to be when you read out the top ten.
How much tension would you say there is as we unveil the top ten, which is published in you know online and in most journals?
Well, I never see it till I get into the room here, so...
Well, how can we ask people to review a movie if they don't know what's in the top ten?
They could take an educated guess, they could look online, they could do their own research.
I will give these out in no particular order.
Well done. Okay. There we go, you see? A solution, right. Fine.
So if you have seen The Wolfman, Solomon Kane, Alvin and the Chipmunks, Invictus, Astro Boy, Avatar, The Princess and the Frog, The Lovely Bones... Valentine's Day, Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Wolfman, Solomon Kane, etc.
Yeah.
Give us a call, 0500... What?
Can I just say, on the subject of that, if you're writing in about Solomon...
909-693.
Yeah. If you're writing in about Solomon Kane...
Calling
in about Solomon Kane, you can be slightly lengthier, because of all of the ones, that's the one I haven't seen. That was the one that... I had seen the other ones from, but I haven't seen Solomon Kane's. It was off last week, so you can be slightly lengthier.
So you'll have to move.
Seen everything else.
Pretty smart on this. 0500 996 93.
Yeah.
If you've seen any of those films that are in the top ten, I obviously haven't given anything away by reading them out in that order.
Yeah, I wonder where Avatar's going to be in that top ten. It's a real nail-biter, that one.
So if you think you can do any better than The Good Doctor, then get in touch. Please give us a call, and your pithy one-liners will be mixed in with everybody else. Now, we ought to mention, also, we haven't been here for a while.
A week we were off.
I mentioned Percy Jackson and The Lightning Thief.
Yes.
Right.
Or, as we now like to refer to it, Benjamin Saddlegrass and The Cauldron of Penguins, which has taken on... what can only be referred to as a life of its own.
Because within about 24 hours of the last programme that we did, fortnight ago, Benjamin Snedlegrass and the Cauldron of Penguins, the poster,
yes,
the plot synopsis,
yes,
chapter by chapter, and indeed the next six books appeared.
Yes.
All courtesy of the... I think this is all the work of one man, and his name is Jeremy Dillon, and I think he's in Melbourne. He's certainly in Australia. And he works for a company called Seven Shells. And if you look up Benjamin Snedlegrass and the Cauldron of Penguins, you get stuff like this. In an embarrassing typographical error, famed Italian explorer Christopher Columbus has been hired to direct the upcoming film adaptation of Benjamin Snedlegrass and the Cauldron of Penguins. This will be the first high-budget Hollywood film for Columbus, who is best known for initiating Spanish colonization of North America. He beat out fan favorites Paul Greengrass and Guillermo del Toro for the job. A spokesman for Columbus, who died of a heart attack in 1506, said he was thrilled to be joining the Benjamin Snedlegrass family and that he hoped to give fans the movie that the book deserves. Producer John Peters released a statement earlier today saying he was overjoyed to have Christopher Columbus on board and that he brought a sensibility to the picture distinct from the Hollywood mainstream. Begin shooting April for an October 2010 release. About that,
I should
and
say
there's a poster, synopsis, everything.
There is also a rival poster which I've got outside, and during the news break I will go for you. As I've been going around the country, somebody gave this thing to me, which is a rival Benjamin Snedlegrass and the Cauldron of Penguins. So there is not only the official Benjamin Snedlegrass and the Cauldron of Penguins, there is a rival production happening here. I mean, this thing has got legs. We should have copyrighted it.
The Penguins have got legs and Benjamin Snedlegrass has got legs. It's only the Cauldron that doesn't.
Have I told you my thing about Werner Herzog and the Penguins?
It involve any of them getting shot?
Be very, very quick. When Werner Herzog made Encounter at the End of the World, a film about Antarctica, right? And he said the one thing he didn't want to do is he didn't want to go out and film fluffy penguins, right? Because he didn't want anything, you know, all that proof of the existence of God nonsense. He wasn't interested in any of that. He said, I don't want fluffy penguins. No fluffy penguins. I just want people talking about existential angst and ecstatic truth. And they went out to Antarctica, right? And Herzog spoke to all these people. And they kept saying, you know, the thing is, Werner, you really ought to go and see the fluffy penguins because they really are quite magnificent. So after all this cajoling, Herzog finally goes, oh, all right, we go see the fluffy penguins. And he gets his camera and he goes out and he stands out and he finds in the whole of Antarctica the one psycho penguin. He gets this group of penguins all walking this way towards the food source, right? And Herzog's camera picks out the one penguin walking the other way, to which Herzog's voiceover says, there is nothing that way but death. And yet he seems happy.
Alex Boswell, silver swimming certificate. Last week, the good doctor expressed his disbelief that Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief existed, given its close resemblance to the plot of Harry Potter. Though I, of course, agree that Chris Columbus is a gaping bean counter, surely accusing anyone of plagiarising J.K. Rowling is a little unfair, given that the Harry Potter novels are essentially a rehash of Jill Murphy's The Worst Witch, with added Star Wars, Lord of the Rings melodrama and pretentious myth-inspired character names.
Yeah, funny enough, is that comparison with The Worst Witch quite common? Because I was reading The Worst Witch to my children, and going, is it me or have I heard this before? And there is an uncanny similarity there.
This is an unstoppable stream of correspondence now. This is Colly in Bundoran, County Donegal. It's been a tough couple of years to be Irish. Aside from the recession, of course, Thierry Henry comes along and teaches us that Maradona's handball wasn't funny after all. Now, with Leap Year, we have another British actor butchering our accent, following in the wake of Gerard Topper-de-Mornin Butler, teaching us that years of laughing at Hollywood actors doing their Cockney accents was wrong. We're really sorry for Jedward too. Please stop kicking a nation when it's down. Regards. It has to be said. We have to keep hold of that.
No. I do want to say that because that should be said now. We'll obviously
if you're in Ireland, sue.
We are going to review Leap Year, but it is true that the phrase "top of the morning" does indeed appear in Leap Year. As indeed,
and dancing, country dancing,
yes. Hey, fiddly dee.
Does anyone say? I don't think there's a begorra.
Nobody says begorra. That's the one thing they may say. At no point does anyone say begorra, begorra, but they do say pretty much everything else, including. And you and I were both there. We both witnessed it, including the infamous "top of the morning" to you. Now, I want an official apology, because I have put up with this so many times. You, sitting in screenings with your phone, yesterday, right, when we were watching Leap Year, I was actually sent a text before we went on which said, please make sure Simon doesn't Twitter during the screening. Am I able to turn his phone off? Am I heckers like? And now, on his own programme, in the middle, whose phone goes off? But Simon, I'm sorry, I can't be removed from my handheld appliance, Mayo. Apologise.
It was Mrs. Mayo. Who is?
Oh, that's all right. I'm terribly sorry about that. Of course, if it was Mrs. Mayo, then that's fine. Does she not know you're on air?
It was a very lovely photograph that flashed up, I have to say.
Thank you. Can I just say that it was a very bullying, hectoring style that you developed there? Was it just your special leadership style, as it's referred to at the moment? Do you notice you came all aggressive? Sorry about that.
That's fine.
Happy now? So here's an interesting thing. Someone who claims to be called Dr. Martin.
Yeah.
Whilst enjoying a stir fry last Sunday night, the background noise that was the local radio station, Keeping It Real in the Northwest, caught my attention as the DJ announced, that's K-E-R-M-O-D-E. The film critic, Mark Kermode, he's the one with the dark suit looking moody, start the Facebook flash mob now.
Pardon?
A couple of songs and an advert or two later, the DJ then said, we know Mark will be at the BAFTAs tonight, but we're sure he'll pop out during a break to check his Facebook on his mobile. Let's see how many of you he accepts as friends. Knowing Mark's love of all things technological, I was wondering just how many virtual friends he has made since last Sunday on his Facebook site.
I have no idea. I have nothing to do with all that stuff.
See? Absolutely. So there you go. So thank you very much to Dr. Martin, who also concludes rather splendidly, and you might want to pick up on this. Speaking of virtual nonsense, he says, I saw Avatar and I've invented a new word, wash, which is a combination of wow and tosh. Now, you see, there will be quite a lot of use for wash.
Wash, yes.
I think.
Wow factor. Can I very briefly address the subject of Crazy Heart, because I wasn't here last week and I'd like to, if
before,
that's
before you do that.
Yeah, all right.
Just as
that means no, right?
Yeah. Well, just as the BAFTAs came up there, as Dr. Martin mentioned it, a lot of people look at the BAFTAs and they go, ooh, and they think Oscars.
Yeah.
Do you think it has any relationship this year to what's happening at the Oscars if you look at what happened at the BAFTAs?
No, because I think what's going to happen, I mean, you know what won at the BAFTAs, that Hurt Locker won Best Film and Catherine Bigelow won Best Director. I think what's going to happen at the Oscars is going to be very different to what happened at the BAFTAs. I think for a start, the Oscars, Avatar is going to win Best Picture, because I think the some say it has to. You just can't take that much money and not have the Academy reward you for doing it. I think Catherine Bigelow is going to win Best Director, because I think historically the moment is here. She is going to be the historic first woman to walk off with a Best Director Oscar, and quite right, because if you look at her back catalogue, if you look at Near Dark and Point Break and those sort of things, I think that's really terrific. And how exciting if the first woman director to win an Oscar for Best Director was Catherine Bigelow for doing this incredibly muscular cinema, and not Jane Campion for doing, as you said before, Female Annihilation in Bonnets. But as far as the actor and actress category is concerned, I mean, Colin Firth, very, very, very popular win at the BAFTAs for a single man, although, you know, obviously heartbreaking that he had to beat Andy Serkis in Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll in order to do it. But at the Oscars, it's going to be Jeff Bridges, because, again, it's kind of Jeff Bridges' year, because Jeff Bridges is nominated for Crazy Heart, which, incidentally, I think is a decent film. Floyd and Boyd reviewed it last week, and they generally liked it. I mean, there was this accusation that it's basically Tender Mercies light, and I understand that accusation to some extent. I mean, I tend to be wowed by anybody who does a musical performance in which they're doing all their own music. And if I'm thinking about this, you know, you look back at Gary Busey doing his own singing in Buddy Holly's Story, Val Kilmer, who I generally haven't got much time for, but actually being very good in The Doors, Joaquin Phoenix winning for Walk the Line. And I think it's significant, therefore, that Jeff Bridges has not just been nominated, but looks like he's going to win for a performance in which he's doing all his own music. As far as Best Actress is concerned, all the bookies in America are saying it's going to be Sandra Bullock for The Blind Side, which we haven't seen. Well, I have seen it, but it hasn't opened here yet. And which is one of those kind of true life tales of the triumph of the human spirit, blah, 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 blah. But so Carey Mulligan and Colin Firth, who were both very popular winners at the BAFTAs, have got a very hard fight in their hands. And I suspect that what's going to happen is that those two categories are going to go completely differently in America. Best Supporting Actress and Best Supporting Actor will be the same. It will be Monique and Christoph Waltz. So you will get that matchup, but it's going to be a totally different Best Film. And I suspect it's going to be a different Best Actor and Best Actress. And, you know, that's just that. In fact, it's right that the two award ceremonies should not just be a perfect match. There's far too much emphasis put on the fact that one award ceremony is somehow just a straw in the wind to the next one.
I mean, you do suspect that both Carey and Colin, as I referred to them, will be actually quite chuffed just to have the nomination.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely. But it's, you know, that's what they say, being nominated is everything, and you know, winning doesn't matter, although clearly it obviously does. But I mean, don't you think that it's going to be Jeff Bridges? You've seen Crazy Heart.
I haven't seen Crazy Heart.
Oh, right, fine.
No.
Well, believe me.
So I have no idea.
It's going
to be. But if you say so, I agree with you.
I mean, he's very good. He's doing this kind of grizzled country and western star, and he's playing his own song. And actually, the songs are very, very good. Colin Farrell is also really good. And Colin Farrell is very, you know, he's very up and down, but he seems to be really on form in that film. But it as far as the Sandra Bullock thing is concerned, there was that news story about last year her being the most profitable screen actress. Why are you making semaphore signals while I'm talking to you?
Because it's radio.
Okay, fine. That she was the most profitable screen actress of the year, although apparently the actress who is currently paid the most per movie is Emma Watson. Did you know that? Hermione Granger.
Yes, yeah. Somewhat.
I mean, that would seem bizarre to me. But so I think it's going to be Best Actor and Best Actress in America is not going to match up with the BAFTAs at all. I think it's going to be Sandra Bullock and it's going to be Jeff Bridges.
Tim Beckwith saying, Simon, I went all the way to London, into London to see Crazy Heart last night, just around the corner from the premiere thing with a topiary giraffe. It was worth the effort, which presumably was Alice in Wonderland he's referring to. Anyway, it was worth the effort. Excellent film.
Oh, right, fine, sorry.
With
yes.
No baddies other than the booze. Great music. Avatar, it ain't.
Okay. No, it ain't. On the Alice in Wonderland front...
Yes, which is now not going to be boycotted by Odeon.
Yes. Has that now all been sorted out?
Well, I believe so.
I predicted that it would be sorted out.
Truly, you are the source.
No, because obviously
wisdom.
It was going to be... Because actually, you know, there is an industrial move towards it. In fact, I mean, I think the way everything is going to go in the not-too-distant future is that we're moving closer and closer to day-and-date releases in all formats. And that, for a start, would solve all this you know, nonsense about stopping piracy by taking phones off film critics as they go into screenings. And secondly, it means that basically people get to choose which format they watch films in. And my suspicion is that more people will want to see films in cinemas than perhaps... The naysayers believe. If you say to somebody you've got the option of watching this movie on a download on a 6-inch thing on your portable phone if you want to, but you could go and see it at the Empire on a huge big screen, I think more people than you think are actually going to want to go and see it in the cinema. Plus, it means that you're in the cinema with people who are there because they want to be in the cinema, not because that's the place they can see the movie because the pirate DVD hasn't become available yet. And so you're not sitting in the cinema with a bunch of people talking on their mobile phones and making noise because they don't really want to be in a cinema.
The man responsible for the creation of everything online to do with Benjamin Snidelgrass and the Cauldron of Penguins, yeah. Jeremy Dillon, emails in, Dear Of Time and The City, just had the rather surreal experience of having my Ben Snidelgrass press release read out by you, which is rather odd. Should I actually make the film now? Regards, Jeremy Dillon, age 19, in Sydney, Australia.
Yeah, go on.
So
go on, and the legal suits are yours to have.
Absolutely, and we will come to the opening night, even if it's in Sydney. Is that a bit rash? And we'll the BBC will pay.
No, can I just say that's
we'll
not
claim it back.
That's not as rash as when I was at the Watershed in Bristol. Somebody said that all my negative things about 3D were rubbish, and in fact, the point at which I would realise that they were rubbish was when David Lynch did something really exciting with a 3D movie, And as a tribute to Werner Herzog, I made a promise that if David Lynch makes a 3D movie, I will go to the Bristol watershed and eat my shoe for real.
Well, that's a really exciting story. But if Benjamin Stiddlegrass and the Cauldron of Penguins becomes a 3D film, I'm going to see it, regardless of what you say.
Well, I'm going wearing my 2D rectifying glasses.
Michael Barton says, while we're in matters Antipodean, just been listening to the podcast every week whilst picking blueberries in Coffs Harbour, which is in Australia. Unfortunately, the only two cinemas within 100 kilometres just show movies with Gerard Butler. Having just left and travelled through Brisbane, I took the chance to cram in five movies in one day.
What, five Gerard Butler movies in one
before
day?
Before moving on. No, because he was taking advantage normally where he is in
Coffs
Harbour.
Fine. Okay.
If you live in Coffs Harbour, you can only see Gerard
Butler.
Sorry,
I didn't understand the grammar.
Okay. So, he's now watching five movies in one day before moving on. That's catching up with some of the good doctor's better recommendations. It was quite an exhausting... So, this is how it goes, okay? It's an exhausting start.
Okay.
A Serious Man, 9:20. It gave him 20 minutes to get to the next cinema for The Road at 11:40. Once finished, straight back in to catch The Hurt Locker. Imagine that. So, that's The Road into The Hurt Locker.
Yeah,
you're
going
to be pretty wound up by
that. Out of Single Man, which is suicide.
Running up to the other end of the city to get to see Shutter Island before ending back at the very first cinema with a profit at 6:30.
Very good. That's a full-on day. That's what the Cannes Film Festival is like, only that sounds quite good.
There's not much light relief in that list. At the end of the day, I staggered out of the cinema very pale, very confused, disconnected from everybody around me and very hungry. Pretty much the same emotions found in the five movies.
I think that's great.
Have you ever seen more than five in a day?
Yeah, I've seen seven in a day.
But you're not normal, I think.
No, but it was Shock Around the Clock, so it's kind of, you sort of have to. And also, at Shock Around the Clock, when they used to do it, when it was 24-hour, it was often, you know, like you get three 89-minute horror schlockers back-to-back, so it didn't really feel like racking it up that hard.
OK, now look, if you've beaten that, if you're not a film critic, but you've seen more than five films in one day, send us an email. It's mayo@bbc.co.uk. As far as the reviews coming up, the top 10 coming up, all we need is we've got everyone lined up, apart from the Princess and the Frog. Rachel in Coventry on this email. Simon, I've never watched live before. This is brilliant. Why don't all shows do this? I love it. It's all live streamed.
It is. Can I refer you to the
week.
To the poster which I've just brought in, which I want you to appreciate the majesty of? That was a poster that I was given for a rival production of Benjamin Snidlegrass and the Cauldron of Penguins. Obviously, you can hold it up to the live stream, but would you care to read out the credits? I think the credits at the bottom are particularly fine.
Yes, so Snidlegrass, Cauldron of Penguins, nice little illustration. They're Columbus & Company, brackets Accountants and Actuarial Services, in association with Bean Counter Films, presents a Ka-Ching Entertainment Big Flappy Hands production, a film by committee, Benjamin Snidlegrass and the Cauldron of Penguins, featuring David Morrissey. Look at these people who've wangled their way into our film. David Morrissey, Michael Sheen, David Tennant, with Ikea Knightley, Orlando Bland, Muriel Strepsil and Jason Isaacs as the head penguin. Music by Fairport Convention, directed by Chris Columbus. And
if you look at the penguins, one of them has actually got a Jason Isaacs Green Zone moustache.
That's very good.
You see?
Yep.
We'll put that on the website.
So who did this? Mark Jones.
Mark Jones.
Name at the top. Mark, you're a genius.
This has got legs.
Are we going to do this 50-50?
What, 50% for them and 50% for us? Or you mean 50% between you and me?
Exactly.
No, let's do it the way we work this show, which is 80% to you, 20% to me, and then we'll do the work ratio the same way, 80% to me and 20% to you.
I like that. So we have a box office top 10, which we're working through because of the absence of Matthew Good. Hope you're enjoying your sort of coffee by now, Matthew, rather than coming in and
more
getting a
kick.
More
than we enjoyed going to see your film.
that's very true. So at number 10, but basically what we'll do go first,
right,
and then we'll introduce a random caller on each film as we go through.
Okay.
Number 10, Astro Boy.
I didn't think it was as bad as many people have suggested. Obviously, it's not it's not for the diehard devotees, but I thought it was perfectly fine.
Now, Nick in Derby on Astro Boy. Nick, you're on.
I found it was good for kids, it's good for adults. I thought the dark Pinocchio stuff was very good as well. However, on the downside, it's the only animated feature I've seen where there were voices miscast. Bill Nighy is not a short, stumpy scientist, and Nick Sideboard, Horseface Cage, even his voice is wooden, to be quite honest.
Nick, thank you. One sentence with intriguing use of punctuation. Appreciate that.
Many,
thank you.
Many colons and semicolons.
Yeah. And can you remind, when do you use a semicolon? I was asked this
after
week.
A colon. You use a colon at the beginning of a list and then semicolons between lists, or you use a semicolon as an exaggerated comma.
Thank you. Number 9, Invictus. This is from Daniel in Northumberland. Overall, I enjoyed it. Went to see it on Saturday with my dad. He's a big rugby fan. I thought it was a film with three parts. The first 40 minutes or so were basically Morgan Freeman, who I think is pretty convincing, doing a lot of worthy speeches about principles and high ideals. Middle third, where the team are training and going out into the prisons and slums, is terrific, with images saying more about reconciliation and self-belief than any of the speeches beforehand. Damon is great as Pinar. The rugby itself is well shot, but in the last 20 minutes, the film became too saccharine. Eastwood does a much better job than Oliver Stone in Any Given Sunday, but he still can't resist shooting the end of the match in slow-mo or having a montage of people celebrating. 3.5 out of 5. Keep up the good work, Mark. Love the show, Steve, says Daniel in Northumberland. You on Invictus.
I thought it was much better than I expected. It was a rugby movie that I really enjoyed and made the rugby completely understandable. It was obviously made more exciting for me by the fact that I didn't know the outcome of the match. And I know everyone said, well, surely you could tell. No, I couldn't. I didn't. And I really enjoyed it.
Ben in Bayswater. Afternoon.
Hello.
You're on Invictus, sir. Your sentence is?
The acting was great. It's just a shame that none of them knew how to play rugby.
Yeah, you see.
Ben, thank you.
That pithy and good, that. And apparently that is, there are other people who know about rugby who have said the same thing.
Number 8, Alvin and the Chipmunks, the Squeakle, hanging in there for a mighty long time.
It's really propping up the bank accounts, isn't it? Well, not as good as the original Alvin and the Chipmunks, which itself wasn't the original Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Pat in Hemel Hempstead, you're on. Hello, Pat.
Hello. My husband took our grandchildren to see Alvin and the Chipmunks. They loved it. He was traumatised and he's never been the same since. And he was so bad that his friends at work gave him a soundtrack, some kind of the film, to try and get him back to our world. But he's lost. So it's a warning for all grandparents out there. If children love it, be very careful if you're a grandparent.
I know we're moving on beyond our a single sentence rule, but why was he completely traumatised?
I don't know. He can't speak coherently about it. And he goes all unnecessary when you try and ask him.
And did he take a bottle of Jack Daniels with him or something, or what?
No. I don't know. He can't speak about it. Anyway, love the show.
Steve.
Thank you.
Can I just say on the subject?
Thank you.
He took the grandchildren. I took your children. Now that is devotion.
Number 7 is Solomon Kane, which you haven't seen.
Nope.
So we'll get Dave in Edinburgh. Dave, you can have more than one sentence because we haven't seen it.
Well, I can't speak as fast as Mark, but I'll try. Well, I finally found out that there is actually a downside to having an unlimited card, and that downside is that it did give me free entry to see Solomon Kane on Thursday night. I thought it was absolutely dreadful, predictable and woeful. Basically, if you've ever played a video game with dragons and demons, this was it. It starts off with the hero, who's actually a very bad guy, turned good guy, turned bad guy, fighting his way through different levels of baddies until he gets to the very end and meets the ultimate bad guy, and the final scene is played out. I was actually sat at the very front, and that was a benefit.
Now, I'm intrigued by the fact you've got an unlimited card. How much did that cost you, David? Did you win it or what?
Well, no, it's Cineworld, you can buy them. I think it's £13.50.
Right. So, other unlimited cards are available,
yes,
I should say, for balance.
But if you'd actually had to pay like £7 just for this one particular movie, you wouldn't have gone.
Well, your normal filtering and judgment systems are corrupted because everything's free. So you just go and see as much. As long as it's not a period drama or an overly girly film, I'll go and see it, and it's not wise.
Nigel Floyd really liked it. And although I disagree with Nigel on many things, respect Nigel's judgment. When Floyd and Boyd were on here, Nigel thought it was pretty much his film of the week. He really expected to not like it, and he really, really enjoyed it. And he told me that it's one of the most fun times he's had in the cinema recently. So I am going to go, because that's now two completely conflicting reports. But Nigel really liked it.
I heard his review, actually, and I think that was one of the reasons I did decide to pick that one on Thursday.
Okay, so it's his fault.
For that.
Excellent.
David, it's people like you who are going to go and see Leap Year, can I say? So there you go. People who don't, not looking at any kind of financial contribution that they're going to have to make to the cinema. Anyway, that review to come. Number 6, we have Wolfman. This is from Juliet in Teddington. A couple of weekends ago, I was jogging around Richmond, Riverside, listening to the podcast review of Wolfman. As you started discussing the word for wolf-like, Mark suggested it was vulpine. Lupine, I shouted out. Before I realised that I was in public and that nobody else had any idea why I just shouted, lupine! Parents started reeling in their children. I've often laughed out loud in the gym to strange looks, but this is definitely my most embarrassing Mayo Kermode podcast moment to date. Have other listeners also been so embarrassed? That's quite an interesting
thing. Yeah, I have to say, I did, even as I said Volpone, I did say Volpone, that's not right, is it? Because I know Volpone the fox. And it's just always that lupine never doesn't stick in my head as
and
meaning
Professor
wolf.
Lupin.
Yeah, I know. I understand that.
Yes, Ben Copland in London. I couldn't agree more with the good doctor and his review of Wolfman. I recently went to the cinema hoping to see a fun horror ham of a movie. Let down for three reasons. You could tell from the get-go it had problems in direction and poor script. The projection was crooked from the start and at one point completely slipped down off the canvas and the audience was reduced to only seeing two-thirds of the screen. That's great because then there's never a projectionist, is there? Cause it's
And can I say there is moves afoot at the moment as a rise of digital projection. Certain projectionists' jobs are in danger. And more than ever, it is important to fly the flag for good old-fashioned projectionists who sit there and nurse the film through. Because if you leave the film, as is happening in multiplex cinemas, that sort of thing happens. It is a really, really terrible thing that projectionists are becoming an endangered species. No, sorry, this is important. Are becoming an endangered species. They really need to be looked after and loved.
Thank you. And Ben concludes, because we're obviously only halfway through that email before the rantastic moment. During the dogfight at the end, I couldn't help but laugh out loud when Harold Howard popped up into the frame. For a second, I thought the projectionist had got it wrong for a third time and switched the reel to Teen Wolf 3. Ben, thank you very much indeed. On the phones, on this very subject, is Peter, who's in Trowbridge. Hello, Peter.
Hi.
On Wolfman, off you go.
Well, I just thought it bared uncanny resemblances to Curse of the Were-Rabbit in part. I don't know if you've touched on this, but everybody I've mentioned it to has gone to see it and then ended up in stitches, particularly the priest moment. I just sort of envisaged this lightning bolt and funny, dodgy organ music going on in the background. I don't know if you've touched on it or if you notice it. But try watching the two back-to-back, might work.
The only reason I wouldn't is because I think Curse of the Were-Rabbit is a fantastic film. It's brilliant.
Oh, definitely.
No, I mean, and that's about, and in fact, the whole problem with Wolfman is, I mean, there are certain things in Wolfman, you know, it's fairly well lit. Obviously, the design, the design is doing what the design's meant to do, but the fundamental flaw is, why would you take that old design and update it? Why would you take the blueprint of the old movie and use all the newfangled special effects and millions of dollars without fundamentally updating the thing itself? I mean, what you've got in American Werewolf is, look, if you're going to do a man transforming into a wolf, let's do it. But what you've got in this is, if you're doing a man transforming into a wolf in the manner that they would have in the 1930s and 40s, but now we're doing it with 2010 technologies, well, what's the point? Plus, there is no underlying tension between his two selves, despite the fact that there's this whole sort of weird repressed thing going on with Emily Blunt. It's just no sub. There's no heart. It's bloodless.
And we're counting down the box office top 10. We've done the bottom five. Here come the top five. At five, it's Benjamin's Little Grass and That Cauldron of Penguins.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing else to say on it, having set this behemoth in motion. Can you set a behemoth in motion? Having given birth to this behemoth, I shall now step away.
Well, if you've given birth to it, presumably you could set it in motion by just pushing it down the hill.
As if you gave birth to it on the top of a hill.
That's true. That might work. That could be a scene, actually, in the closing and emotional moments of the movie. Percy Jackson is the movie we're talking about. Simon in Birmingham has seen it. Here's his sentence.
It's very simple. Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Clone.
That's very good. Now, that is exactly what we're looking for.
Simon,
see?
Thank you. That's very good.
It was pithy. It was puntastic. It was on the money. Can I just say very, very quickly,
I just say, you prefixing any comment with very, very quickly.
Very quickly.
It's hilarious.
For those who haven't been listening to your Radio 2 show, of which I'm a devout and slightly, sort of...
On the Mighty Drive, yeah.
Yes, on the Mighty Drive. When you said, if you ever feel like criticizing somebody, you should walk a mile. If you're going to insult somebody or criticize somebody, you should walk a mile in their shoes, because then when you insult them, you'll be a mile away and you'll have their shoes.
That was good.
The best joke you've made all year.
But no, I was just reading out a tweet from someone else.
Oh, I thought it was you. Okay, fine.
So next we get to Valentine's Day. It's at number four. This from...
A greeting card full of vomit.
Which is pretty good, really. Where do you go from there? Rachel on this email says, I'm a newcomer to your podcast, but after a harrowing cinematic experience, felt compelled to write. I was dragged to see Valentine's Day on the 15th of Feb by some of my friends that are in relationships. I'm single, and I think their reasoning was that because I'm single, Valentine's Day would be unbearable and I'd be wallowing in self-pity, which is not true, actually. I'd heard The Good Doctor's review and I knew it was going to be awful, but I had no idea how awful. Valentine's Day itself didn't push me over the edge, but Valentine's Day, the film, had a blooming good try. It was totally joyless and unfunny and as contrived as it gets. By the end of the film, I was apoplectic, furiously whispering to my friends that they clearly know nothing about me if they thought I'd actually enjoy this drivel. Needless to say, I haven't forgiven my friends yet, and I'm making them come with me to see Princess and the Frog and Ponyo to make up for those 2 hours of my life that I'm never going to get back.
Fantastic. I mean, what can I say? I agree wholeheartedly. It is vomit-inducingly poor.
Joseph in Deptford, here's his sentence.
It is less fun than cold sores.
Joseph, you're on Valentine's Day.
Rom-coms shouldn't be as long as epics.
Very good,
very good.
Very good.
Joseph,
very
appreciate
good.
That.
Very
Thank
good.
You. Number three, it's The Lovely Bones. This is a new entry out last week.
Can I have a moment on this? Because I didn't...
Yes.
Okay, fine. Last week, it really got royally kicked around by Floyd and Boyd, who disliked it in a way that, I have to say, several critics have disliked it. My feeling about The Lovely Bones is this. It is a failure, I agree. But it is, I think, an honourable failure. The problem is, I mean, originally, as you probably know, the project was with Lynn Ramsey, who would have done something very different with it. And she, for whatever reason, her project didn't come to fruition, and then the rights fell away, and then they ended up being picked up by Peter Jackson. And Peter Jackson and Fran Walsh essentially took it on and turned it into a $100 million, or whatever, how many millions, you know, special effects movie that looks, for all the world, like Vincent Ward's What Dreams May Come. And the problem is, as soon as you start putting Heaven, the afterlife, on screen, as a digital animation, you are pretty much on a hiding to nothing. And Vincent Ward discovered that with What Dreams May Come, because the imagination of the audience is always going to be somewhat different. I mean, even as little as I know about computer games, the big problem for me with Lovely Bones, despite the fact that it's got a terrific performance by Saoirse Ronan, despite the fact that actually I think Mark Wahlberg's pretty good in it, despite the fact that I think the script is essentially an honourable script, the problem is that all the afterlife stuff, or the in-between stuff, as it's referred to in the movies, looks like Super Mario Galaxy. I mean, literally, like, not even as a sort of sarky comment, it literally looks like Super Mario Galaxy, because my son plays that all the time, and I'm sitting there watching them and going, this is bizarre. They've actually made the afterlife look like a computer game, and that's a real problem. And I interviewed Peter Jackson for the Culture Show, and I said, did you ever consider not putting Heaven on screen? He said they did, but the problem was, then how do you show the central character of Susie Salmon? Okay, you could have her in voiceover, but they actually wanted to show her, and I understand what he wrestled with, and I would love to have seen how Lynn Ramsey would have solved that problem. Because what Jackson proved, and he proved it honourably, was it doesn't work when you do it like that. I mean, Matter of Life and Death, those films which have got an interesting technique, they do. What Jackson did was he tried to do something and he failed spectacularly. But I'd love to know how Lynn Ramsey, and Lynn, if you're listening, or if anyone knows Lynn Ramsey, let me know how you are going to get around the issue of the afterlife, because there must have been a better way of doing it.
Now, we're going through the box office top 10. We got to number three with the added excitement of caller contribution, but it does have to be just one sentence. We got to Lovely Bones. By the way, we lost our Avatar callers, just dropped off. So we need one sentence on Avatar 0500 909693, but you have to do it now, otherwise we'll just waffle.
Okay, go.
Just on Lovely Bones, interesting point from Simon Wright. I decided to take my 13-year-old daughter, who cried all the way through Lovely Bones.
Surprised.
It was generally a complete emotional wreck for a good few hours after leaving the cinema. As a 43-year-old roughy-tufty ex-serviceman, I found it quite hard going myself, and I cannot imagine what the authorities were thinking when they came up with a 12A rating. What do you think?
Yeah, in fact, what I'll do is I'll get. Could you print off the full BBFC?
What are you talking to now?
I'm just looking off to see whether they can print the full BBFC. I agree. I think. I mean, funnily enough, I found all the stuff, the particular stuff at the beginning, very very hard to take. But the way that classification works is that there is very specific things that push a film over into the 15 certificate. And I'll give you an example of this. There's one of the scariest films I have ever seen is a film called Spurlos, The Vanishing by George Sleiser, and that was rated 12 by the BBFC because there's nothing in it that was actually in and of itself cuttable. And this was when the 12 certificate first started out. And I remember people coming, because it's I mean, I'm 46. I was in my late 30s when I said it was absolutely terrifying, but there's no bloodletting. There's, you know, it's just a terrifying film, but when you actually come down to classifying it, they're quite right. It's a 12 certificate film. And the distributors actually sent the film back to the BBFC to say, look, it's basically a horror film. If you give it a 12 certificate, you're going to put people off.
James in Leamington Spa has been waiting a mighty long time, but here's his sentence on the aforementioned Lovely Bones. James, you're on.
Well, I thought it was an enjoyable fair, but ultimately a bit flawed.
All right, OK.
Short to the point, well
done. That's very good. I hope you think it was worth waiting for there. James, Ollie in London. I went to see Lovely Bones as I was intrigued by the anger and universal dismay towards this film. I did indeed leave the cinema angry and dismayed, but solely at the bigoted and spoilt brat critics who are vocally competing to see who hates it the most. Mm-hmm. I found the film interesting, arresting and daringly experimental. I haven't read the book, but just because I haven't doesn't mean my defence of this film is invalid. To me, this film is clearly aimed at 13-year-old girls. It was told from this point of view with a pubescent emotional spectrum that encapsulates the flurry of life at that particular time. All the things people are slamming the film for are the very things I congratulate it for. Yours in resilience and defiance of counter-argument.
I'll say two things. Firstly, I'm very good to hear that. I think you're quite right, incidentally, about critics vying with each other to hate it more. I mean, I did feel the same thing. Because, as I said, I think, although I think it's ultimately a failure, I think it's an honourable failure. And I think Saoirse Ronan is great. On the subject of the BBFC classification, actually, the classification is long. It's a page of stuff. So may
let's
I
not do that?
No. But may I say, if anyone's interested, because I'm sure this is a thorough, you go to www.bbfc.co.uk. You go to the search engine bit which says search titled. You put in Lovely Bones, and then when it gives you the classification, there's a bit which you click, which says extended classification information. Spoiler alert! And that will give you the whole page of the BBFC explaining their 12 certificate. Can I advise everybody who's interested to do that? That website is there for precisely this purpose, and it's they really care about what goes on it. That looks to me to be a very full explanation.
So particularly useful for parents. They obviously
in relation
give
to
away
the
12
a stuff certificate. Yeah, exactly,
film.
Exactly.
Princess and the Frog. It's Mark in Middlesbrough with his well-crafted sentence. Mark, you're on.
Hello. I really enjoyed it. And I think the point where you really know they've got it, it's like, yep, that's it. They've got it. Is where the Shadow Man comes on. And he does that brilliant villain song.
Yes.
You know, they used to do, like, Be Prepared in The Lion King or Hellfire in Hunchback of Notre Dame. That's the point where they get it right, and the rest of it's just dazzling. It's a brilliant alternative to the likes of Astro Boy.
Mark, thanks very much indeed. Hugh, on this email, I'm 25. Simon, I was enthralled by it. It's a lot less than the spectacular 90s musicals that I was expecting, and a lot closer in spirit to the warmth and elegance of their 50s films like Peter Pan or Lady and the Tramp. The film fits a gap in the market perfectly. Let DreamWorks do the annoying, instantly dated madcap stuff, and Pixar, the pioneering technique and human insight. Disney have reclaimed Happy Ever Afters, simple morals and trumpet-playing alligators. And the Evangeline subplot, let's call it that to avoid spoilers,
yes,
was the most surprisingly moving and daring thing Disney have done in decades.
I agree.
I can't remember another Disney film where a simple comedy sidekick is given such an important and subtle emotional role. The only fault with P&F I can see is that its scheduling looks like it will sadly bury Ponyo, another beautiful children's film that Nigel Floyd will be missing out on. That's because the email starts off by Nigel saying last week that he tries to avoid seeing children's films.
I know. Which is foolish.
Princess and the Frog done, which leaves the UK's number one, which is still Avatar. Here's Johan, who's in Cardiff, with his one sentence. Off you go, Johan.
Blue, bland and boring.
Thank you, Johan, for that.
May I say quickly on the subject of Avatar, because a couple of people have written in and said, oh, it's good to see that Kermode is, you know, is now being harsher on Avatar than he was originally. No, I'm not. I want to be absolutely clear about this, as I've said every time. There is real wow factor in Avatar. There are special effects in Avatar that are genuinely jaw-dropping, and there is 90 minutes of exciting sci-fi stuff in it. Unfortunately, it's 2 hours and 40 minutes long. The script is, as you have said several times, Smurfahontas, and is incredibly simplistic, and everyone explains the plot to themselves. And the whole 3D thing is the thing I really have issue with. But, and I refer you to my original review, as I said before, yes, all the things that are wrong with late period Cameron are wrong with it, but you still go, for everything that's wrong with it, wow.
And then maybe use the word which we were introduced to earlier, which is
was wash.
Wow and tosh together.
In fact, that's it. That's exactly it. It is officially Wash.
That could be a category. If you go into your local DVD shop,
yes,
you know, to hire or to buy,
yes,
you know, there's science fiction, there's romantic comedy. We must talk about leap years. Sometime.
Yeah, we're going to do it.
And then
we do it
Wash.
First? Wash.
Richard in Hong Kong. A promotional,
hello, Richard in Hong Kong.
A promotional email for the restored version of Metropolis, which is to be screened here in April during the Hong Kong International Film Festival,
yeah,
refers to the Fritz Lang movie, which we're talking Metropolis, yeah, of course, as the Avatar of the 1920s. That's how it's being sold. Can the good doctor find any parallels to justify this? Would it not be more appropriate to say that Avatar might, brackets, might just be the jazz singer of the 2010s, but only if 3D catches on in a big way, which
It isn't. The restored version of Metropolis, the last time they restored Metropolis, I don't know whether you remember this, but Giorgio Moroder was in charge of the soundtrack. So along with doing a real spanking do on the print itself, we then had to watch it with Adam and the Ants as the accompanying music amongst other 80s horrors. And that was a very strange event.
We were talking about, so that's the box office top 10.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Dee, for the calls. That was much appreciated and quite fun. We had an email earlier from someone who saw 5 movies in one day, taking advantage of being in a top city as opposed to picking strawberries in the outback. The Good Doctor, yes, so this is for you, about the number of films in one day. My record so far is 6 in a 13-hour flight from London to Kuala Lumpur, I think. That's Brian in Somerset. Many years ago, Simon and I watched Chungking Express, then Species, Alien, Aliens, Alien 3 and The Thing, all back-to-back in Bradford in 1995. Peter
okay,
Keithley.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Bertie on the M6 saw all 5 Planet of the Apes movies back-to-back,
yes,
with no break.
But we've all done that. Me and Tim Polcat were doing Planet of the Apes all-nighters with video in 1980s.
Dear Sarah, Madam, my friend raised money for a film project with a sponsored back-to-back watching of all the Police Academy films. He ended the day a broken man. Says Sam.
That is really good.
In Edinburgh. It's 3:15. Is it leap year?
Yeah, do leap year first.
Excellent. So leap year, it's the romantic comedy seasonal release of the week. In fact, it's our review of the leap year.
It is.
Coming up.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
If that podcast wasn't enough, visit my Uncut blog at www.bbc.co.uk/markkermode for video reviews, anecdotes, and the chance to let me know your opinions.